We're back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. Every month we talk astronomy with Jean Creighton, who is, when she's not giving presentations at the Manfred Olson Planetarium, our astronomy contributor. And she's in the studio with us now. Hello, Jean. It is great to see you. How are you?
I'm great, Bonnie. And I'm just delighting that we're getting more light.
More light and warm weather kind of fits and starts right now. But it's coming. And as you swept into the room, I started thinking about motion. And while you and I are not stars in that sense, stars move, right?
They do.
And how did we ever figure out that they did it, that it wasn't just us?
Well, that's an excellent question. It turns out that it took us a while to figure that out because, really, if you think about it, the stars look fixed. I mean, yes, they move all in unison, but stars seem to be in the same place with respect to other stars over year and year and year. So how did we discover this, you'll say? Here is how we figured this out. There are not many stars that get occulted, is the term, by the moon. That means the moon will pass over them. Now, as you, I'm sure you can visualize this, clearly this happens for many stars. I mean, the moon goes through the whole, you know, makes a full circle around the Earth every year. But it doesn't happen to hit many bright stars. So, in ancient Greece, people noticed that when the moon goes in front of certain stars, they disappear immediately, abruptly. It's not a gradual thing because the moon doesn't have an atmosphere. And if it's, in fact, a phase of the moon where it's the dark side that's cutting off the star, it is so mysterious because a star is there, a bright star, first magnitude, and then it's gone. And the moon passes by, and then it comes back.
Let me interrupt.
Oh, absolutely.
So how did we just not think, well, that's the moon moving?
Oh, we did think that.
Okay.
We understood. The moon, somebody's moving.
Yeah.
But that's cool. That was under our, we had that in our grasp. That was fine. But that helped us get very detailed positions of where these stars were. So about 1,000 years later, actually, I'm looking at my notes here. So these observations were from 509 AD in Athens, where this had happened to Aldebaran. This is the bright reddish star in Taurus. I'll throw in a little bit of trivia here. Aldebaran comes from an Arabic word for follower, because if you're sitting there and looking at the stars as time goes on through the night, you'll see the seven sisters, or otherwise known as the Pleiades, move, and Aldebaran seems to be following them. So this had happened several times in 509. That made an impression. It was recorded. There we had it. So Edmund Halley of the Comets fame, in 1718, looked at the records and said, wait a second. I'm looking at the position of Sirius. I'm looking at the position of Arcturus, another bright spring star, and Aldebaran, and they're off by minutes of arc from where they are now. This he found confusing. A minute of arc is not a usual kitchen kind of unit. So let's just remind ourselves that there are 360 degrees in one circle. Each of those degrees is 60 arc minutes. So one part in 60 of a degree, these stars were off. Now you might think, well, that's not very much, but it was enough to make him scratch his head and do some calculations and realize, oh, there is proper motion. That's the term for it. So proper motion tells us that stars move perpendicular to the line of sight. So if you look at a star long enough, I mean, this is a small effect, right? You're not going to be able with the naked eye easily to see something that's a few arc minutes. But over time, you will see something like a quarter the size of the moon. which is something you will notice if you knew, if you had some reference points, right?
Yep.
So in 1718, we discovered that stars do move in an absolute sense. And we also realized that over time, long periods of time, 10,000 years or so, the patterns that we see as constellations are going to be altered because those stars are physically moving in space. And if you wait for, let's say, 100,000 years, the Big Dipper is going to be quite unrecognizable.
What we see today.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was at a time, were we sure that we circled the sun at that point?
In 1700s, yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. We were confident on that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we knew that, but we somehow thought that the heavens were fixed, as it were.
Well, they certainly looked so, mm-hmm. right? So the stars, I mean, the stars seem to be, if you imagine it as a dome, they seem to be, of course, they move from day to day through the day, and you see different stars through the year. We knew that. But we thought that the relative positions of each star with respect to its neighbors is the same.
Right, which is pinned in place.
Pinned in place, if you will. But they're not moving.
Mm-hmm.
Which in some ways seems a little odd now. How could that possibly be? But that was consistent with many years of observation. So it took a detailed observation of something really bright that we really have nailed to say, oh, these stars are actually moving in the sky. And if you, as I said, if you had long enough to really take those observations, you would see the patterns, the relative positions of stars moving.
Well, and of course, in reverse, if for somehow we got to Arcturus, say, and looked back at Earth, we'd be moving. Earth would be moving too, right?
Well,
the whole
system. They wouldn't, of course, be able to see the Earth probably specifically, but they'd see the sun.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, the sun would be moving. Yeah,
right.
Sure. So I thought that what a cool idea. And I love the idea that because the moon has no atmosphere, this is one of the most instantaneous effects you can see in the sky. There are other things. Most planets, for example, have an atmosphere, so that dimming is going to be more gradual.
And you wouldn't necessarily pick it up.
And you wouldn't pick it up,
right,
necessarily. So this is my little special treat that I was looking at the history of Aldebaran. I'm learning more about Arabian contributions to astronomy. And Aldebaran is from the Arabic, and I realized that Aldebaran has this cool property that because it's a first magnitude star, it has that effect. And first magnitude, that's also an interesting historical fact. All the stars, Hipparchus was the astronomer who did this, I think it was in the first century AD, said, look at all these stars. They're not all the same brightness, obviously. He was able to catalog about 6,000 stars, and he put them in six bins. The first magnitude star was the brightest, and he got down to the sixth magnitude, which was barely visible with the naked eye. And he put these stars in bins, and the idea was to be able to classify them by their apparent brightness, how bright they seem to be. This isn't connected to how bright they really are because that depends also on their distance. He was able then to classify, and Aldebaran is in that first class of stars, the really bright ones. So anyway, that's my playful astronomical story for today.
Springtime.
Yes.
We're dancing. The stars are dancing in the spring. It's all about motion, right?
That's right.
Well, let's hope that the next time we talk, it will be even warmer, Jean, and we'll have other stories of celestial motion.
Yes.
All right.
I look forward to it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Jean Creighton is director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium on the campus of UW-Milwaukee, and she's our regular astronomy contributor. You can find past conversations with her at wuwm.com.